Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Hey guys, we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you about our recent partnership with the Amazing Bones Coffee Company.
Let's face it, you're probably sick and tired of drinking that old plain Jane coffee brand every morning. Well, fret not, dear listener. Bones Coffee is here to kick your taste buds into high gear.
Bones Coffee has a wide variety of flavors to choose from, including maple bacon, peaches and spring, island grog, and my personal favorite, chocolate raspberry.
Once you become hooked on the coffee, you'll be excited to learn that they have plenty of merch options to choose from as well. T-shirts, mugs, tote bags, the list goes on.
You can buy their coffee in whole bean, ground, and even evil single serve options.
Guys, we wouldn't lie to you. This coffee is great, and we know that you're going to love it too, which is why we have partnered up with Bones Coffee, and now our listeners have an exclusive discount code.
Make sure to use the code MUSICSPEAKS at checkout for 10% off your order.
That's right, James. Go to bonescoffee.com to kickstart your new coffee addiction and use the code MUSICSPEAKS for 10% off today. If you're anything like me, free time is limited. So things like yard work are just not doable. And if you're also like me, you don't even own a lawnmower. That is why All Above Landscaping is the right choice. All Above includes a variety of options when it comes to your landscaping needs, including lawn installation, design, irrigation, debris removal, maintenance, and much more. If you're in the city of Sumter and you're looking for reliable service at a friendly price, give All Above Landscaping a call today. It's 803-464-7414. Mention that you heard this ad on this podcast and you'll get a special discount on your first service. Again, that's 803-464-7414. Call All Above Landscaping today. Like so many of you, we battle depression through life's ups and downs.
Music has always been the one thing we could rely on to get us through the tough times we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music, share our stories through songs and lyrics,
interview musicians and other artists,
break down genres,
deep dive into band biographies,
and much, much more.
This is the Woodward Fail
Music Speaks podcast
with Blake Mosley,
James Cox,
and Amanda Dolan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Woodward Fail Music Speaks podcast, where I'm your handicapped host, James Cox, and where we talk about how music helps with depression and anxiety. But today, it'll really be awesome today because we are interviewing Jay Watson and Kyle Wilshire. Sorry about that, man.
All right. No problem.
So a little bit about Jay Watson is Jay is passionate about speaking and writing. He has built a disc golf course, which is awesome. Saw Garth Brooks in 93 and takes pictures with fish, which is awesome too. Big fish, I think, right?
Well, the closer you hold them to the camera, the bigger they look.
So. Yes. Yeah. His hair started growing gray at 20. Nice. And still loves Will Smith. Don't we all? You know, oh, yeah. My dad is a retired colonel, and he started going gray about the same time you did, you know, because military, you know. So, okay.
He did.
Kyle Wilshire has seen YouTube in concert 11 times. That's pretty impressive. Mm. He tries to paint like Bob Ross. Bob Ross is great. And enjoys love talking about Star Wars. He loves pop culture and prides himself on being able to name the year in any movie from 1980 or 1990s was released. So they have been professional communicators for over 20 years. They have extensive background in storytelling, humor, and all the things entertainment. With their first published work together, they have a lot of excitement around the world, and they created it and can't wait to talk about it. And yeah, and they came out with a book called The Dead Rock Stars, and you can order it at deadrockstarsbook.com, and we are very excited to talk about you. How are you doing, guys?
Great. Thanks for having us. This is really exciting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Getting to talk about things we love like this, this doesn't feel like work. It feels like we're getting to play. So this is awesome.
Yeah, because y'all have I just read a lot about you, so it doesn't feel like y'all. I mean, because when people read stuff about me, I'm like I don't really feel like I accomplished that much. But when you hear it back, you're like, I did all that. So does that feel like y'all accomplished a lot so far?
I mean, the disc golf course, that takes a lot. That takes a lot of time and effort.
Holding the fish like this.
There you go. Yes.
I'd go see YouTube 11 more times, you know, if I could have the opportunity. But, it does. It kind of, when you put it all together, it kind of feels like, yeah, we've done some stuff.
It feels like, yeah. So, Kyle, you've seen YouTube 11 times. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, there was a YouTube album. I forget the name of it. That was released on everybody's iPods way back in the day. Yeah. Do you think that was a conspiracy theory or what did you think about it? You know, you've seen them YouTube 11 times.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
What that was a miscalculation is what that was. YouTube thought that, hey, we're going to do something nice for the world. We're going to give everybody our album for free. They don't have to pay for it. It's a gift. What they didn't realize was that the people who would be using the technology in 2014 when that came out, they didn't want people messing with their stuff. Don't mess with my stuff, man. You know, don't put stuff on my phone without telling me. Don't put stuff in my iTunes without telling me.
Do you think that was maybe like the beginning of the woke culture?
That's a good question.
I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a woke thing. I think it's more of a...
Privacy. Cancel culture.
Okay.
Yeah.
People have been canceling folks for years. We just decided to come up with the name.
Yeah, but I mean, that was like what?
2014.
Okay. Really? Was it that?
Yeah. Because social media started in 2010, and I think that was the beginning of the downhill of society, really.
Of society, yes.
Because everybody's it's about me, not you anymore. And I'm like, I'm over, dude. You know, and I mean, it's 2024, so we can't, you know, seem to go past. It's about me and not you ever again. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you don't think there's a conspiracy? Oh, okay.
Well, just for clicks, what is the conspiracy?
Oh, I just wanted to know a few things, like anything around it. I didn't.
Like, what are some of the...
I mean, just, you know...
They wanted to boost their sales, and the free... I mean, it's all about the numbers to, like, artists... So I guess free versions count as a sale.
Yeah, I don't know. From what I understand, Apple paid them like $100 million, or something, thinking that it would be a big thing for both the band and for iTunes, and it just kind of totally backfired because people didn't even bother to listen to it. They're just like, don't mess with my privacy, man.
But do we know, is that true? Like, is that true for the majority of people that got it? Were the majority of the people like boo, or was it?
It's a squeaky wheel thing.
Yeah, the majority of people did not want the album. They were like, no, get it off my, I didn't really mind because U2 is a great band and Kyle can tell that too, So, yeah. Jay, you saw Garth Brooks in 93. How was that? Was that a great show?
Yeah, man, it was revelatory. Country music up to that point was pretty tame. as far as performance goes,
Right.
all the content has always been wild and sad and crazy storytelling and amazing, but
Yeah.
the performance aspect of things, he treated it like he was a pop star or a rock star. He was running off that stage. I remember at one point he jumped off the stage and grabbed this swinging ladder that you didn't even know was there. It's just hanging out in the audience. And there were flames like it was AC/DC or something. And
Yeah. ACDC crazy.
it was a crazy experience because he kind of, as Garth has done over his career, it was the very beginning of him kind of mashing genres in such a way that you kind of find where country music is today. And I would say he's partially responsible for that. That's why you got your other bands that are doing, I mean, even down to what's his name, Nas X and Old Town Road, like that would have never existed if it weren't for Garth Brooks, I think.
Two things about Garth Brooks I want to discuss with you. One is he doesn't have his music on any other platform besides Apple, besides Amazon, and he states that he wants people to listen to him like beginning to end. But I don't think that's kind of fair because in his concerts, he doesn't play any album from beginning to end. He plays every like songs from this one, from that one, from this one. So it's kind of like a, I mean, do you think that's a
I think you can make tens and tens and tens of dollars streaming music. And he is in rare air attempting to sell more albums than any other artist. And so he's close up there. I don't know if he's top three, but he might be top two. I don't know. I don't know if he's surpassed some of them. But that would be a good thing for us to, we should have Googled. We should have prepared for that, Kyle.
Yeah.
But he's so close to achieving whatever those records are. I really think that's the proper reason he's doing it. It's not about necessarily money at this point for him, as more as
Right.
long it's along the lines of he wants to be one of the top sellers of all time of albums. And streaming doesn't really achieve that goal. I think Metallica did it for more purity reasons. Metallica was more interested in the purity of the album. I don't know that Garth's super interested in the purity of an album. In fact, I don't know that any country artist really cares about an album. They like a good single.
Right. Yeah, it's all about singles today. Speaking of, we talked about U2 and the conspiracy theory. Let's go over to Garth Brooks and the conspiracy theory. Have you heard it?
What is it?
Oh, he's a serial killer.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa, dude. Yeah. Because Tom
Oh.
Segura says it's pretty weird that a lot of fans go missing around the time that he comes to their cities. He's got a lot of properties, he has a lot of space in the back in his house. So Tom Segura is very adamant about, calling him out. I for me, I don't believe it, but I mean that I just love him, But yeah, what are
He's
your thoughts?
Googling it right now.
Oh
He's
yeah.
Googling his
Yeah,
phone right
dude,
now.
I mean it's because this was brought up years ago, but I think it's like an ongoing issue with Tom and Garth. Or something, yeah, because Garth blocked Tom Segura on like everything. So I mean, why would you block him? Just say, no, man, I didn't.
Garth is from here. Garth lives nearby, but
Yeah.
really close to where we are right now.
Oh,
And
okay.
I have not heard any of
Oh,
this. He lives in a
yeah.
town called Goodlettsville. We live in Hendersonville. It's just the next town over,
Yeah,
really, where I live in Hendersonville.
my parents live down the street from him.
Really?
And I mean, what it looks like is Tom Segura said in 2018 that he looks like he's killed a bunch of people,
Right, yeah.
which is something Tom Segura would say.
Well, I
He's
guess
one of my favorite comedians, and
yeah.
he's not afraid to say crazy things.
No.
But I mean, anything's possible, I suppose. But I'll tell you what. That serial killer, he can perform.
Yeah, right. Who cares what who's the so just as long as
I didn't
you're
say who
taking,
cares,
I
but
mean,
I'm just
I didn't
telling
either. Well, I just did, so but I'm taking it back because I mean, he makes great albums, great songs, so. I think he came in with a new record recently, so
He's definitely showing up more in social media. I'm not particularly a country music fan anymore, so
okay.
I don't think I've listened to Garth post 2000, but
Is there a reason why you're not a country fan anymore? Or just got out of it? Just, tired of the genre?
So I used to work with students, and one of my students around 2005, 2006 started making music, And the type of music that he made was alternative music. And he ended up getting on David Letterman, and he did Lollapalooza. And the type of music that he kind of started doing, I started listening to other artists. And before it was over with, man, indie rock, indie pop, alternative music is kind of what has spoken to me. I've dabbled a little bit more into folk and Americana, particularly Avett Brothers or Trampled by Turtles or Punch Brothers, some of those bands. And they speak to me, but it's Sturgill Simpson. You know, what's different about Sturgill from regular country music is he does care about a complete album. He likes to tell a story with his albums, and that's interesting to me. I really enjoy original songwriters, and a lot of country music is not that. And so I've kind of evolved a little bit where I can still appreciate a good 90s country song,
There you
but
go. There
new
you
stuff doesn't really speak to me much too much. Now, some of this, I don't know what you call it, outlaw country, I guess, Jason
go.
Isbell, some of those people, I don't mind that at all.
Kyle, what is your favorite genre?
I like classic rock, really. I'm kind of weird in that, I've seen U2 11 times. U2 is my favorite band. U2 is truly my favorite genre. But
It's
to
like
take
kind of
it,
the own separate genre, right?
that's right. But to take it beyond that, I am more of a, like, I like older music. I like, classics. I like, 70s, 80s, 90s, and kind of the older the better for me. And Jay's always kind of finding the new stuff. He's trying to introduce me to new artists and, hey, you need to listen to this. And have you heard
Good.
this?
Yes, I love
And
that.
I'm the old guy. Get off my porch, man. I like my oldies. That's me.
Nice. So the reason why I brought that up is to see what's your favorite kind of music, because I have some record albums that I want to show you. So I think that y'all are around my age. I'm 44, so I think y'all are like 30s to 40s maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, very kind of you. Very kind of you.
Oh,
45,
45,
46.
yes. 46, 45 if, around my age, right?
We're right there, man.
Yeah, hell yeah. So I'll go show you some vinyl records, and you tell me if you like the band and what are your thoughts when you first heard it, or you don't like it, and we'll go to the other one. I got
Yeah.
like five or six of them here, okay? So
Got
we
it. I love
have
it.
Stone Temple Pilots, the Purple Record.
I was recently on another podcast, and is that the album that Tripping on a Hole on a Paper Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart
No,
appears on?
no,
Today
that's the
Love.
next one. This is the
Oh,
one.
okay.
This is their second record.
This is Interstate Love Song, right? Isn't that
Yes,
the
yes,
yeah.
That's got, yeah. So.
I'm not a huge SCP guy, but man, I always kind of like when their songs would come on, I wouldn't switch the channel on the radio in the
Yeah,
car,
yeah.
like in high school. Yeah,
Right, yeah.
I agree. Like they, Scott Weiland kind of draws you in a little bit. Like you're interested in what they're doing. And I mean, I still don't know. I've listened to the Hootie and the Blowfish version. I still don't know what Interstate Love Song, what the exact words are, but I'm like, ring rare. I can do all that. I love it.
You just did the Creed voice.
It was really Pearl Jam,
You went more
Creed.
Pearl Jam. Yeah,
But
you went more
ever
Pearl
since
Jam.
that's a Creed voice, because everybody can do Creed, Scott Stapp is great,
They're more fearless, go there for Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, but yeah, that was more Hootie doing
Who
those
did a
songs.
lot of that too? Okay. All right, so we have my favorite band of all time, which is gonna be Nirvana.
Oh,
Okay, so
yeah.
I couldn't find the Bleach album because I do have that, but what do you all think about Nirvana and their albums? Because I came up with three of them. So
Yeah.
what did you all think about them?
Nirvana, well, Kurt Cobain is a character in our story, and I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. So we're fans. We're not a, yeah, I wouldn't call myself a Nirvana fan. I do remember, as you probably do too, since we're about the same age, I do remember the day he died. And there were literally girls in my high school biology class crying. I'm not kidding. Like it was that big a deal. And so not a big fan, but I do respect their music, and I appreciate what they did in their very short time.
I was kind of in my peak country phase at that point when that stuff came out, and It wasn't until after he passed away that I started to kind of develop an appreciation for the band. And, there are some songs right now that if they come on, I'm going to stop and listen to. And there's some
Right.
songs that I found that there was theirs that I didn't remember listening to. And then I found the cover of it and I'm like, oh yeah. And I'd go back and listen to that. Like, Sturgill Simpson does a cover of In Bloom, and it is so radically different from the album, but it's the same. I don't know. It's the same kind of magic in both of them for me. That song is like so interesting, and the way Nirvana does it, it hits you in the face. And the way that Sturgill does it, it's like you understand kind of, I don't know, as best you can, whatever Kurt's writing. Like you understand the song, you understand a little bit more what's kind of going on there. And I don't know. There's just several songs like that where I've kind of developed an appreciation for them when somebody else sings them, and then I go back and listen. And I mean, like for us, like our generation, if Smells Like Teen Spirit isn't on that list of top 10 for our generation, then we don't know what we're talking about.
It did not exist, But yeah, that list is trash because it didn't have that one song on there.
Yeah, that one song kind of defines the entire grunge era, in my opinion.
It took out hair metal bands. I mean, hair.
Obliterated them. They like they from something to nothing overnight.
I think Air Supply is still trying to come back, but I mean, because I said Kurt and Nirvana killed our career, and God, they're so mad at them, and so I don't think they're mad at them anymore. But
I think most of those hair bands, though, they was self-inflicted wounds that caused their careers to go away for the most part,
But I mean, to this day we still can't get rid of Motley Crue, So
They
they
keep making
God.
another documentary or another movie
Yeah.
about
Yeah,
them. Def
another
Leppard keeps touring, man. They were like one of the top 10 touring acts last
Yeah.
year. Yeah. I
Another
mean,
double live album is what we don't need, But okay, so two questions about Nirvana and well, one question about Nirvana and one question considering Nirvana. Do you think that he was murdered or suicide? Because everybody thinks that Courtney Love hired somebody to kill him. There's a suicide in there too. I mean, because I don't think you can shoot yourself with a shotgun, because the shotgun is like it's it doesn't make sense to me,
I think he faked his death to become a secret agent. That's what I think.
Yes, and we're gonna talk about that too. But yeah, but yeah, but yeah, but I think that Courtney did something, hired. I don't know. I don't know.
I have heard that some thought that he wrote all the songs for the whole album that came out not long after his death. I heard that those were all his songs, and Hall just took them and
Really?
recorded them. Yeah.
Oh.
That's one conspiracy theory around him that I heard, because why haven't they made more music?
Yeah, and it was good.
It was
Exactly.
fantastic. It was really good.
Exactly. All right. So we have the 27 Club when Kurt was a part of that. You may know, well, I'm sure you know that the 27 Club is artists that died at 27. So
Yeah.
we have Kurt Cobain, Brian Jones, Jim Morrison, Amy Winehouse, and a whole lot more. Hendrix too, Joplin. So why do you think they all died at 27? Because that's kind of eerie that all of them died at that age.
A lot of those folks attained success very young. 27 is young, but even younger than that, like in their early, some late teens, early 20s. And I think for some people, they're just not equipped to handle that level of success, that level of, resources and finances. And once you make it big, people quit telling you no. And you just kind of get surrounded by a an echo chamber of you're great, and and nobody can talk sense to you. And so I think that a lot of times some of those folks just got so caught in the trappings of fame and success that and then no one would kind of help pull them out. Nobody could get them out of that death spiral, so to speak. And so yeah, I don't know that it's anything magical about the number 27 or the year that many years old. I think it's just when they started having success and how it kind of built and built and built and just kind of came to a head for a lot of them at that point.
Yeah, I also think that Everybody dreams about being a rock star at some point in your life. You're like, that'd be so cool to have all those people listen to me. But going and playing from city to city, the same songs, the same way, over and over and over, and having to have that same energy over time, that just wears you down. And then not actually living the same life as anybody else, like not being friend, not being able to have regular relationships because everybody else goes to work, everybody else does other things, and like you're in a different place. And I think the isolation that happens, combined with the yes people, combined with just trying to keep yourself up and have energy for all those things, it leads to addictive tendencies that can destroy your life. And also, I don't know that I've met any true geniuses that are completely normal. I think that there's a good number of people that are, I think if you're looking at it statistically, troubled people and geniuses often kind of go together.
Yeah, they go hand in hand. I agree. I agree. Okay, so going back to my vinyls, we got at least four more. Yeah, well, I've been a long time Metallica fan, but lately I've become one of these guys, but fans, not because of consistency. These guys always come out with an album every 2 or 3 years. Metallica has not. And the band I'm talking about to audio people is Megadeth. I have the Rust in Peace album. Are y'all fans or no?
Is that Dave Mustaine?
Yes. Yes, this
That
is
is an
the band.
interesting dude. I'm not a fan at all, but Dave
Okay.
Mustaine is a super interesting guy.
Yeah.
Don't know much about him other than that.
Okay, you don't know what okay. Yeah.
When I
Oh, yeah.
was a child of the 80s and early 90s, my mom, I could go to Kmart. I don't know if they had Kmart where you are, but I could go to Kmart and I'd put
Oh, yeah.
25 cents in the machine and I'd twist it and I'd get a rock and roll sticker. And so like I was trained at a very young age, Judas Priest, not a good band. You're probably gonna go to hell for listening to them. And
Oh.
like over and over these stickers would
Right.
come out. So, you know, just seeing the name Megadeth was something that was like, it's not just regular death, but it's like
It's
mega death.
mega, right?
So that was a no-no in KK in Kathy Watson's book. And so I didn't, you know, I steered away from the heavy metal, otherwise, you know, the demons were gonna get me. So
There you go. Country's a little bit better though, you know. My opinion. Okay,
yeah,
so
I agree. It's just
yeah.
as devastating.
Right. Right. Okay, so I got these three more vinyls are the same band, and and one of the singers here is talked about in the book. We have The Beatles with Let
Yeah.
It Be.
Let
This is
it
my
be.
favorite album of all time from theirs. What are your thoughts?
Let it be is my favorite Beatles song of all time.
Yes. Yeah, it's great.
I know that's not like, you know, you're supposed to pick like a Norwegian Wood or like some weird one. You know what I
No,
mean? Like one of the like the seventh song from the fourth album, whatever. You know, like you're supposed to pick a weird track, but Let It Be, I mean, it just speaks to me. I love that song so much. I really love how that album was captured in the film, the Peter Jackson movie that came out a couple years ago, and just seeing them record and watching Paul on the spot, right? What was it, Let It Be, that he wrote on the spot? Like he's just messing around on the piano and
yeah, I think
he
so.
wrote
Yeah,
it right
yeah.
there. I mean,
I
it was
think
just.
he. I think he had a dream about his mom, and his mom said, like, let it be. Just, you know, I mean, and he
Yeah.
wrote this only like 10 minutes. I'm like, Jesus,
Yeah.
you know?
Just to see that level of genius, like do their thing and to watch it as it happens, just unreal. So cool. Yeah.
That's a really cool album because it teeters between the pure fun and the philosophical and fantastical and just kind of next level. Like my second favorite song on that album, Get Back, is my first, but my second favorite one is I Got a Feeling. Like it is just so blues rock ridiculous, and I just love it. Like there's so many different things about that song that I love. I love, you know, Paul McCartney singing, and then John Lennon bringing all these crazy, you know, first song that I ever listened to and didn't quite realize for a long time. Like he talks about everybody having a wet dream in that song. And like you don't even catch it, you don't even
Yeah.
notice it. But at the same time, it's like everybody pulls their socks up and you're like, who puts this stuff together in the same song? But I just think that's a fantastic song.
Yeah. Okay, so next we got Rubber Soul.
I mean, I'm just gonna have to confess, I can't tell you what's on Rubber Soul, but I'm sure I'm sure I would know.
Matter of
the
fact, I
song.
couldn't either. So I had to look at. Okay, so it's Michelle, I Drive My Car, Norwegian Wood, and In My Life, which is a great song.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of the Beatles, but this album is kind of like a. It's not like a throwaway album. It's more like a, you know, I'll listen to it, but not really, you know. So.
In My Life, that's a good one.
Yeah. That's probably one of the best ones out there, whole album.
Yeah, that's a deep cut album right there.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the last album we're going to discuss is Abbey Road.
Abbey Road. And, I mean, is there a more iconic album cover than that one in the history of albums?
Well, you know? some would say it's Sgt. Pepper's, but I highly disagree with them because this one is, I mean, you can't go out anywhere and, oh, that's Abbey Road, you know?
Yeah.
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 That's such an iconic record and album.
Looking at the track listing here with Jay, he pulled them up on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of those, I think the one that I, you know, it kind of gets me the most. Go scroll back down for a second. It was The Golden Slumbers and To Carry That Weight. Man,
yes.
I love it. And, yeah. And part of the reason I like it so much is because it's featured on the cartoon Sing. Did you ever see that movie Sing?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I love how it's used in that movie. And that kind of exposed my kids to the Beatles a little bit. So I kind of got, you know, excited by that. But yeah, I love that. I love how so many of Beatles songs, they just flow one right into the next. So you really don't know, you know, when one song ends and the next one begins sometimes. It's pretty cool.
Right.
I think, obviously, for me, Octopus's Garden is one of the catchiest melodies. Like that little thing that they've seen, it's just like, if they would have put actual words to it, you know, it would have been something. But like even Octopus's Garden, like it's just such a crazy song. You can't get it out of your head when you hear it. Yeah. Come Together is like iconic in every way, shape, or form. Like there's no anything about that. But one of my favorite ones on this album is I Want You, She's So Heavy. Like again,
yeah,
that's where they lean into that blues rock where I'm kind of tipping my hat about the things that I like. But
right, yeah.
You know, She's So Heavy is not a phrase. Any, I mean, like if you were to put I Want You, She's So Heavy in a song today, like I don't know if you get canceled or it's just a song about you know, somebody's backyard, I guess.
Right. Yeah, She's So Heavy. It's like, yeah, that could be kind of a cancellation for you. But yeah, have you heard of the Soundgarden cover of Come Together?
Oh, I've not heard Soundgarden's cover.
I'm about to pull that up right now.
Great, great.
Obviously, I've heard Aerosmith's cover. In fact, I think I heard Aerosmith's version before I heard the Beatles version.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. When you hear one before you hear the other,
you're like,
sometimes you like the imitation better than the original because right. Aerosmith sped it up and right. The Beatles is a little bit slower. And so I've had to adjust to the Beatles version because it's slower, you know, and whereas Aerosmith is faster. So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, the Soundgarden is a lot heavier. So get prepared. And, you know, I mean, if you don't like it, it's fine. But I mean, you can't go wrong with Chris Cornell, you know. So we're going to talk about Elvis and John Lennon now. Elvis, okay, so those are my two go-to people when I always go to them besides Kurt Cobain. But my mom influenced me to listen to a lot of Elvis because she was a huge Elvis fan and saw him one time in concert way back when. And my aunt Molly, she was a big Beatles fan. And I got, you know, and I got some of the best worlds between them. So your book, The Dead Rock Stars, introduces both of them, and you tell a story how they faked their death and become secret agents.
Right.
Yeah. So what was the, how did ID come about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go back to the 27 Club and then these two famous people that died young. I mean, maybe not as young as 27 Club, but they died young.
Yeah.
There's always been conspiracies around them. There's always been kind of curiosity things. And one day Kyle saw a news clip of something and it kind of sparked an idea. And then, you know, we started to kind of create this universe. And I mean, who better to be huge parts of the story than the two most famous rock stars around, you know, at that time anyway.
Yeah. Our story is set in 1999. It's not set in the present day. And that's important, you know, partially because the folks that we wanted to feature in the book, Even in 99, they're starting to get a little bit older. But if we were to try to do it now, I think I saw on the Academy Awards the other night that Yoko Ono is 91 years old, and
Well,
so I don't know the age difference between she and John, but I don't know how old John would be today. And I think Elvis, I Googled the other day, Elvis would be 87 if he were still alive today. So like if we tried to set it in the current day, they would be too old to, to be butt kickers still. So we set it in 99. So they're a little bit younger, a little bit more still able to do the things physically that we would want them to do as secret agents. So yeah, those are just two guys that play a huge role in our story, really important, and are really a lot. They were a lot of fun to write and to imagine as secret agents, 20 years or so beyond their death. It was kind of fun.
Just yeah, because John died. Well, okay, so when you go to like Vegas, you'll see Elvis all over the place, right? So I mean, Elvis might still be alive, who knows, because he's everywhere in Vegas, right?
That's
So
right.
always, yeah, because you go down one street, Elvis live playing live, and you go down another street, Elvis is in, it's like, come on, dude. I mean, so you could tell that Elvis was really influential with a lot of people. They always loved him, and the same thing with John,
Yeah,
Oh,
absolutely.
yeah.
We wrote that into our story actually in the first chapter. Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly walk right down the strip in Las Vegas, and nobody pays them any mind
Nobody.
because, I mean, imposters are everywhere.
Right,
So it's a lot of fun to sort of let these guys hide in plain sight, because if you're dead, you're dead. That's how the world sees it, right? And so to fake your death, to be a secret agent, to walk out into the world without anybody, batting an eye because everybody knows you're dead. It's just kind of fun to play with that. It's kind of cool.
No, so as influential as Elvis was to Vegas, and he's still there, right? Ever present. Kyle spent an influential part of his life in Memphis. I grew up in Nashville. We went to college in Jackson, Tennessee. Elvis is inescapable in all these places. You drive down certain road in Woodland Street in East Nashville, and there's the studios where he recorded a lot of his stuff. You go to Memphis, and I don't think I've been to a restaurant in Memphis where there isn't some memorabilia of Elvis. Like we
Oh
did
yeah.
a book party re recently in Memphis, and at one point somebody asked the question, how many of you have a stand-up cardboard Elvis at your house? And there were like, I don't know, I'm going to say 25% of the people in the room actually owned a stand-up Elvis, like a cardboard cutout.
Right.
And he's inescapable in Memphis, and he's still ever present in Nashville in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, so I have some questions from my co-host. She says she asks, both John Lennon and Elvis were huge stars and had no privacy. How does one become a spy? How does becoming a spy play into the need for privacy? And we all need a break from this world. Yeah, so I mean, like how does that happen?
Yeah, if that's a good question. I don't know that we really thought much about that,
No,
but you thought about it a little bit.
yeah,
you said, yeah.
I think that fame and losing your anonymity in any way, anywhere you go, is very destructive. You're not allowed to just be a person. It's one of the reasons why you see these megastars build these crazy mansions, because it's like the only place they can go without having to feel like they're on. And I think that part of the beauty of faking your death in our story is that you get to have a certain level of anonymity again. Like everybody, one of the things Kyle said a lot in some of these podcasts is everybody believes you to be dead, so you're dead. And even if they see you out in public, couldn't be you because you're dead. And so you get a chance to be back in the world and enjoy the world, but not have to be that person. And I think that mentality wise, when you start to think about what it would be like to be famous, you inadvertently create two different versions of yourself. There's the person who you actually are, and then there's this person, this caricature that the world knows. And where you can begin to lose your mind is when those two people become so separate that you don't know what's what anymore. And being a whole person, I mean, that's the, I think that's one of the most important things in our lives, to understand a whole picture of who we are and to be that person. And so, yeah, I thought about it a lot, just simply because to put yourself in those shoes, it's easy to think about how great it would be, but
Right.
nobody really thinks about the pain and the sorrow and the loneliness that comes with it.
Right. Yeah, because that's one form of this podcast is we talk about how music helps with depression. And you're right. I mean, because you could go out and like have the best time in the world, but come home and like, I mean, it's horrible. And I think that it needs to be talked about a lot more, than we do. But yeah. So what challenges did you face when crafting a narrative that blends conspiracy theories with espionage fiction?
I mean, I guess, when you think about it from a conspiracy
Right.
angle, we didn't really lean too much into conspiracy. It was more the spy angle that we kind of,
Right. Yeah.
leaned
If
into.
we're leaning into any conspiracy, it's more the inspiration. Since you're our age, where do you live? What part of the country?
Lexington, South Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go to the Piggly Wiggly or whatever the grocery store chain there was, and you're checking out with your mom, getting the groceries, right? And you look over, and what do you see? You see a People magazine. You see I don't know, maybe an Entertainment Weekly. I don't know. That's probably early for that. But then there's always those newspapers, the National Enquirer or the Sun or whatever they were called. I can still remember pictures of like an alien and Jesus and Elvis like holding hands, like on the front of the National Enquirer or whatever, or the alien was pregnant with like Elvis's baby or whatever. Like it was all these things, and so that was a little bit of an inspiration for us, just in the sense of Elvis was always spotted somewhere doing something crazy, and for us it was like, well, what if it really was him? But it was just that he wasn't doing those crazy things; he was
Right.
being a secret agent, and
Yeah.
so this conspiracy kind of leaned into the absurd, and then the espionage. What all that looks like. It's like you can get away with a lot of places if you sort of look like somebody. It kind of
Right.
opens the door for you, and so it kind of works to their advantage.
Yeah.
And I also think the older the people were, I mean, they change a little bit. In our story, Elvis would be about 60, 61, 62, somewhere in there, and so, he doesn't look quite like Elvis, but he still looks like Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah. Hiding in plain sight, right? I mean,
That's
there's
right.
nothing better than hiding in plain sight. Yeah. Yeah, because we have all of these people who act and dress like them. You won't know if you're talking to the real one or not. So yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So y'all wrote this book together. So have there been any not like battle fights, but like arguments about how you wanted the right because. Because one has a good storyline, and the other's like, yeah, but this can go this way. And I mean, did you have any like small arguments like that Korean in this book?
This is a big question people like to ask us.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we had little, I mean, we're two different people. I mean, we've been friends for almost 30 years, and we have, similar tastes in some things. But like when it comes to
We'll still fight about Star Wars Episode 9 like all day.
eight,
Hey, Episode 8 all day we'll fight about it.
But when it comes to like, our story, like we both trusted one another that like we just want to tell the best story. We want, we want it to make sense. We want it to be cool. We don't want to have huge gaping, backdoor plot holes, things like that. And so that was our desire. And so if he had something that he felt really strongly about, and I wasn't as crazy about it, I could be convinced because of his passion, or if he explained it in a way that like, okay, that makes sense to the story. And the same thing for me, if I was like, I really think this is important. I really think we need to do this. And he could talk me down to go, I don't know that we do need to do that. I wanted to add two or three new chapters. As we were getting to the end, I was like, I really think we need to add a chapter on this. He was like, I don't think we do. And so like we would just have really, civil, but we'd have, conversations and we'd make our cases. And ultimately, what we felt like what guides us is the story. And the cool thing about it though is that we had an end in mind. We didn't just start writing and go, where's this going to go? We don't really know where this is going, as the writers of the last Star Wars films did. They just, wrote, they didn't know where it was going. All that to say,
Oh,
we
just
wrote with an end in mind. We were like,
right.
this is the target that we're aiming at. This is where we're going to get to. We don't know all the plot points along the way, but we know we got to write to this point. And so that guided us the whole way. That helped us know how we wanted to finish the story, how we wanted to, the story we wanted to tell.
I also think the goal in mind helped us get to where we're going. But the other thing was, once we set a tone, that really cleared up a lot of things for us, because you can get dramatic, you can get serious, you can get intense. And then there's also a piece of this where most of these people experienced a lot of darkness. And how much you deal with that, their demise, the sadness around it, addictions, things like that. Like, it really changes the tone of the book. And so once we kind of landed on a tone, I think it really cleared up. Once you have your goal, where you're going, and the tone, I think it really answered some questions for us. And it's like, once we set up the fence, we know how to play within those boundaries. And our purpose was to have fun. Like, we wanted to have
Yes.
fun. We wanted to tell a good story, one that we could be proud of. And we wanted to kind of celebrate these people that mean so much to the world. And I think we were able to kind of navigate that fine line to where we kept our tone proper. We dealt with some difficult things, but we dealt with it in a pretty light way. And we managed to tell a story that even if you're not familiar with some of these artists, you're still going to love it. And if you're really familiar with the artist,
You're really gonna love it.
while you might not appreciate some of the choices we made, you can at least understand where it came from, because we spent a lot of time studying. We spent a lot of time hearing like their speeches, so we could match it when it comes to their language. And we did our best to kind of, in most cases, capture the essence of the person.
Can you share any like discoveries or revelations you encountered during, did you take what Elvis did in real life and incorporate in this, or was the whole his whole character in your book totally fiction?
It's a mixture. I mean, we wanted to, like Jay just said, we wanted to sort of capture the essence of who they were, but at the same time, they need to serve the purposes of the story we're trying to tell. And so we wanted to get in the ballpark of who they were. But like, one of the things that Jay talks a lot about is Elvis was just dying to be a secret agent, or like a, he collected badges everywhere he went. He wanted to get a badge, a DEA badge, or a sheriff's badge, or something like that. Because he had this, kind of bent towards law and order, sort of, so to speak. And so we kind of leaned into that a little bit, that that's kind of his secret desire always was to be some type of special agent or secret agent or something. So much so that right at the same time we started writing this book, they started making that Netflix series where, Elvis was a secret agent, but it wasn't, he faked his death. It was just while he was doing his rock and roll thing, he also was a secret agent on the side. So similar idea, but different, different
And
direction.
different outcome, yeah.
Yeah. So we wanted to kind of pick and choose from real life what were things that were real about these people. But also we wanted to sort of create a, what would they be like 20 years after they died? What would they be like if they were in a different kind of community, if they were in a place where they weren't just surrounded by yes men, like we talked about? What if they were in a place where, they had to have accountability, and they had to go to meetings, and they had to, and they had to have like, guidelines and guardrails in their life? And what if they were driven by a greater purpose than just making the next hit record? What if they're driven to save the world? That would be, their lives would be totally different. So yeah, we wanted to take bits and pieces of who they really were, but also we wanted to shape it in the way we wanted to do it.
Nice. Now I heard Kyle and I were talking before Jay came. Jay, we were talking before you came on, and you and Kyle do not play any instruments, but he says, I think he's told me your daughter does. Is that?
Well, to be clear, from 5th to 10th grade, I was quite a
Okay.
gifted alto saxophone player, and on occasion a tenor sax. But yeah, I mean, Kyle's family plays music. Kyle's wife and I went to high school together, and we sang in different groups. And so it's always music has always been a huge part of our life. And you're right. Like it does change your mood. It changes your perspective. Like having truly having someone inspire you like changes your whole outlook on things. And about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, my daughter Hope started writing songs and started playing. And you know, from I'd say the last year and a half for sure, there is no quiet place in our house. Like she writes songs and she's working on songs, and she will work on a song for days until she finishes it. And you hear the same song over and over with where me and then her sister, she has a twin sister, we will want to strangle her because, like, if we hear that chorus one more time, like, we're gonna murder somebody. But, like, the reality is they get so catchy, and the thing that's upsetting to us is it's in our head and we can't get it out of
And it's kids, you
our
do.
Yeah, but she plays the acoustic, she plays electric, she plays ukulele. I think she's about to start working on the mandolin. So she enjoys that kind of thing, and she plays piano, but her thing is not really that. It's the storytelling. She loves to tell a story. She loves to write a song. She loves to do things creatively, and that does come from you know, her dad and her uncle.
Well, she sounds very well-rounded in the music category.
She's really okay at a lot of instruments.
Yes, that's a perfect way to put it. Yes, sir. So have you heard Kyle play drums? Because he told me that he wasn't a very good drummer.
Oh yeah, I've heard him play. I've heard Sunday Bloody Sunday in just about every drum set that he's we've walked in the same room together.
Dude, I love Black Sabbath. I love you for
That's
that.
fair, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every drum set ever, that's where Kyle ends up, and I'm hearing Sunday Bloody Sunday. Can't believe the news today.
So Kyle, did you have a drum set in your house where your mom and dad was like a jail, you couldn't stand it?
No, man, I didn't.
Okay, good. You
Honestly,
saved it for that, right?
I was a marching band, so I played the marching snare in middle school, and I learned to play the cymbals, you know, like the marching cymbals, and I learned to play the bass drum. But it wasn't until I was in my early mid 20s that I really, for the first time, jumped on a set, and so I just kind of taught myself how to play the, you know, the set a little bit. But I never learned that. It was all the kind of the marching band element when I was younger. And it's fun. I'm terrible, but it's fun. I love to play it.
Awesome. Yeah, because I'll tell you a funny story real fast. My friend was trying to get him a drum kit, and his mom took him to the store. And I shared the drums playing, and he said, "Oh, this isn't so loud, you know, because of the big room." He got it home, got him in the garage, and she wanted to throw him out the house because they were so loud. I'm like, well, buy him electronic drums next time, man. You know,
Yeah,
all right.
or get those softer sticks that aren't
There we go.
loud.
So two more questions, and this is mainly for Kyle, but see, I want to hear your thoughts too. This is on Star Wars, because I know Kyle loves Star Wars, because
He does too, though.
y'all have some argument about Star Wars 8. Is that what I
Oh
heard? What's the argument?
I think it's terrible, and he's okay with it.
I think it's great.
I feel it was a violation of the story. So my thought is, okay, if you're trying to tell a story, a three-part story, you got a beginning, middle, and end. Okay, so what happens in the beginning needs to impact what happens in the middle. And I feel like Ryan Johnson, the writer director of that movie, just decided, I don't really care what happened in the first part of the story. I'm gonna do whatever the heck I want. And y'all can just deal with it because y'all are a bunch of crybabies who love Star Wars too much. And he went in and just did whatever the heck he wanted, and it just ruined any possibility of the third part, the most important part in my book, the conclusion being any good because he set it up for failure. So that's kind of my really, really, really harsh take
And Jay's
on why
over there like Jay's
they.
over there like, nope, he's totally wrong, dude. I don't
The
know
steam's coming out of his ears. I can feel it. I don't
I think he's ever been wronger. Like, I think that's
don't
messed up.
see
And like,
see you're
I've never heard anything wronger.
But that wasn't my question. My question was going back to conspiracy theories, this time Star Wars.
My friend told me that there's a theory going on that Jar Jar Binks is the
Sith Lord.
yes. Do you, I mean, like, is that true, or like, is that like what are your old thoughts?
Let me just entertain it for a second,
Okay, please do. Please do. Yeah.
and then Cal can say what's accurate. Like, when you
Okay.
go back and you look at all the things that he does, I mean, he like stumbles through an entire battle scene in episode one and
Right.
doesn't get touched. And it's almost like, it's beyond a cartoon character. It's almost someone that has the ability to, control the force around him, if you will. All these bad things happen, like where he happens to be the fall guy in the other ones, and like, what if he wasn't the fall guy? What
Right.
if he
But
was
if he was, well, yeah, the leader of the whole thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I could, like, it's a really fun theory. I don't think it's true, but it's really, really fun. I think what Kyle's about to tell you is how, George Lucas was wanting to dig deep into the pockets of children, right?
That is exactly what I was thinking. Jar
Be
Jar.
before we get to Kyle's answer, I just want to toss out there that if you appear weak, you might be the strongest guy in the world, but if you want to appear weak so that they think you don't have it, you don't
The
have anything to
best thing in
offer.
the world for anybody is to be underestimated, in my opinion.
Yes, and I think that's right with Jar Jar, because he's the most clumsiest, he's the most stupidest character, I think. But yeah, okay, Kyle, let's hear your truth more.
I think it's fun. I think here's what it is you have a generation that came along that, and like my children's age, my son's age, my son's 15, and
Can we call it the era of the troll?
Well, what I was gonna say was my son came along and he loves the prequels. He loves episodes 1, 2, and 3. He thinks they're better than episodes 4, 5, and 6, and he can't stomach episodes 7, 8, and 9. He can't stand them. He loves the prequels. And there's a lot of people that come along and love the prequels. And so, you see with all this love for Hayden Christensen, that he's coming back and he's playing Darth Vader two or three, times in these Disney shows. And Ewan McGregor's played Obi-Wan Kenobi again. And everybody loves it. Universal praise for Ewan McGregor's performances. And going back and reevaluating episodes 1, 2, and 3. So I think people who were raised on episodes 1, 2, and 3 are like, this is actually better. And here's why. And so they're looking for any reason. They're like pulling at threads to go, see, here's why it's cooler, because actually Jar Jar was this evil Sith Lord who was actually pulling all the strings and not just this clumsy, bumbling, like Jay said, children's character who was brought in to make comedy and to make jokes and to have people laughing and stuff. So I think that's what happened with this Darth Jar Jar thing that's been happening.
So he's not a dark Sith Lord like every
No. But now the actor who played Jar Jar did show up in the new season of The Mandalorian as a Jedi, and he went in and he saved all the younglings, he saved all
Oh,
the
nice.
little Jedi, and he was super cool. So he kind of got a redemption arc as well, because he's kind of been, reviled for that
He's been
performance.
beat up.
Yeah, he's
Yeah.
been beat up. So it was cool to see him
I think his
show
name
up.
is
Save him.
I
And
think his name is
I'm about to say something that's probably like heretical in people our age's world, but episode 4 is pretty boring when you compare it to all the others. Like all the others, like watching the robots walk in sand for like 10 minutes is like, okay, we get it. They're walking somewhere. And I mean, some of that has to do with like a 1977 movie versus a modern movie. You watch the 70s movies and they're picturesque and they're cinematic and they're in no hurry to do the things. But if you watch, in my opinion, Empire Strikes Back is probably the best one. Return of the Jedi is probably my favorite one. And there's stuff going on and they're hitting on all cylinders, but that whole startup with the first one, it was almost like they did something that was special, and then they realized, hey, we can make this so much more. We can make a whole universe out of it. We can do all these things. But for a younger generation to grow up on 1, 2, and 3, but then their parents go, okay, you've seen this, but you have to watch 4, and then you have to watch these others. They're so much better. And when that happens for somebody that's seen, the what are the race in episode one? What's
Pod race,
the pod racing in episode one to go into 4, where it's like, oh,
that was
you
kind of
just
weird.
shot a guy in a cantina, I mean.
Because they didn't have any advanced vehicles like they did in one that they had in four, which I
Yeah,
always thought it was
things
odd. We didn't,
got worse.
Rather
It did.
chronologically speaking.
Yes, it did. It did. So our last question for y'all today is this podcast is called When Words Fail, Music Speaks. That can't be anything further from the truth. But what I want to know here right now is, what is an artist, a band, or an album that you can listen to and you can't tell me or Kyle or Jay how it makes you feel deep inside your soul? It can be an artist, an album, or a band.
An
It's
artist
like,
album or band that speaks to my soul.
and you can't explain how it makes you
Okay.
feel to me or
Okay.
Kyle. Yeah.
All right. You want to go first?
Now I'm thinking on this. I'm gonna base my answer on your answer. You go.
I
I feel like we
love
all know
your
what you're gonna
answer.
say though.
Well, I want to go outside the obvious. I mean, you too. Okay, you too. That's my answer.
Yeah,
What
that
something
okay.
other than you too?
Right, okay. Jay?
For me lately, I'm gonna say 21 Pilots.
Okay. Good band. Good band. Any particular song? Or just a whole catalog?
Trees.
Trees.
Trees is the one that speaks to my soul.
All right. Guess what? You just answered that perfectly. Because there's no, I mean, you can't explain how it makes you feel. So you just answered that perfectly.
Want
Without
to explain
even.
it. I want to talk about it, but
Oh
I
yeah,
don't.
if you can tell us how it makes you feel, please share. Yeah.
I think for me personally, there's a certain longing to hear from something more. And that song is about a guy going out in the woods asking for a higher power to speak to him so he can hear. And it kind of culminates in this beautiful climax of dance music, I guess is the best way to say it, that it just feels like a song of worship in a sense that is doesn't use words. And sometimes with music in particular, you can't often explain why it just feels like it comes from somewhere else. And for
Yes.
me, that song encapsulates like what music does to your soul. Like you can't explain some things, you just know they're there. And that song is a song they end every concert with, and it's special to them and important to them. And I think it really speaks to kind of who they are as a people and what they're trying to accomplish with their message. And for me, man, every time I hear it, I get emotional. And it's not a super complex song, but just what they do with it and what they say, like, I want that for my life right now.
Yeah. There. Okay, let's go to
I just can't get away from you two, so I'll just have to say you two.
Kyle. Come on,
What?
man.
I mean, I wanted to go with something completely out of left field, but I was like, no, let's be true to myself.
That's okay. Yeah.
And for me, it's U2, and the song, it's a deep cut, but the song is Ultraviolet Light My Way, from Octoon Baby. And there's just something about it's kind of along with what Jay said, it's something about the desire to know the right way to go, to have the direction for my path to be lit. And to walk that path faithfully. That's kind of something that song speaks to me,
Yeah.
and how many times it's pulled me out of a funk.
We're nice. Nice. Well, for everybody listening to the show, remember to go to www.deadrockstarsbook.com. I'm looking at their merchandise page, and you can buy shirts and books. You can order books. You can order a signed book.
That's right.
And you can get a poster, or you can have them bundled, correct?
That's right. Yeah,
Right
we
on.
got all the merch.
All the merch. And you can also find them on Facebook at The Dead Rockstars Book and on Instagram at The DRS Book. I guess The Dead Rockstars Book was taken on Instagram.
Going to say this: pretty okay writers, pretty bad marketers.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, because I really don't know how to market this at all. But I'm trying, I
No, I
mean,
mean, like
yeah.
if a smart person would have been like, we need to name everything right. But then, like, what we did was we went to Facebook, like, okay, we got this good. Let's go to Instagram. Oh, we don't have this. What are we going to do? And so we're like, how about the DRS book?
That's that you're explaining me because I have different handles where really. Yeah, so
Dude, we greatly appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm so glad you got together instead of one being, you know, because Kyle says that this is the first time we all were doing this together.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's good times, you know. So yeah.
Thank you for having us.
And if you ever want to come back, please do. You just give me a shout out, and you can come back whenever you want to. All right.
Awesome. Great, man. Good luck with your podcast, man. This is awesome. We had a great time.
Thank you so much. And everybody listening, always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.